in the year 1215, I believe, that the barons of England persuaded a somewhat reluctant King John to affix his seal to the historic document known as the Magna Carta. And that event was probably the first and most significant successful attempt in England to broaden the base of power over people, to take away from one privileged set of hands concentrated total authority over ordinary men and women. And for some 750 years after that, the blood of the martyrs was shed, and at times their lives were lost, as dedicated men and women built on what had been achieved, tentatively perhaps, with the Magna Carta. And eventually, the stage was reached where a man and a woman who had truth and justice and decency on their side could fight for their rights, even against the state, and win. What was achieved during the 7 centuries since Magna Carta was really the separation from one set of hands of legislative, administrative, judicial, and penal powers. And what was also achieved, of course, through that separation was the furtherance of the rights and therefore the dignity of ordinary men and women. But in recent times, the lights have been going out. The lights that the martyrs had lit years ago have been going out all over the world, and what we've been witnessing in recent times is a massive reversion to centralism and a reconcentration of powers back into the hands of modern King Johns, big brothers, or their equivalents. And we in Australia, who have inherited the best in democratic institutions from both the old world and the new, we whose material progress has been so fantastic in the relatively short time that we've been a nation, we who have retained not only our basic freedoms, but who have had the best in parliamentary and democratic institutions right across the nation, we must be more than ever watchful and more than ever active to ensure that our nation does not become infected with that deadly virus called centralism. We must be watchful, and I repeat, we must be active, because if ordinary men and women are too lazy, or too unconcerned, or too gullible, too emotional to get their sense of values right, and to fight for the only place where freedom can be guaranteed, a free enterprise democracy, to fight for the only form of society that is appropriate to rational human beings, then we will have only ourselves to blame if we find that our freedoms and our standards of living and our dignity have been eroded to such a degree that individuality and initiative will have disappeared like snow upon the desert's dusty face. Edmund Burke said, "Evil prospers when good men do nothing." And where do you stand today? For what do you stand? Or are you a fence-sitting neutral? What is your reaction when you are propagandized to the effect that our system is wrong? Our system. Do you sit silently by while socialists claim that you or anyone like you who believes in the free enterprise system is to be either pitied or despised? For how long are you and I going to sit idly by listening to the vilification of anyone who dares to defend the profit motive, competitioning industry, and all that they stand for? Aren't you tired of being described as a reactionary, of being said to be resistant to change, of not being humanitarian, not caring about your fellow men, of being an example of a selfish, inward-looking conservative society, of being an out-of-date, anti-social roadblock along the path of progress? Why, in the name of goodness, why do we all, so many of us anyway, sit idly by while such emotional nonsense pours forth and while it poisons the receptive, eager-to-learn minds of the young people around us, those wonderful young people who are going to inherit whatever it is that you and I bequeath to them. Those wonderful young people with whom this country is blessed. Those people who so much want to know, but so often are too proud to ask. What's going to be your legacy to them? Is your legacy going to be that you were too tired or too unconcerned or too shy or too lazy or too busy to tell them about democracy and all that it means? Are they going to be entitled to put the epitaph on your tombstone when your day arrives, which would read this one, "He left me less freedom than his father left him"? What then is to be done? What is to be done by ordinary people? I think the first thing we must accept is that the form of society in which we are is anything but perfect. We're surrounded by many glaring imperfections and injustices and inequities and disadvantaged people. You don't have to be the greatest humanitarian in the world to recognize this. They're there, they're all around. They're there for us to see and thank God to talk about freely and to protest against and to do something about improving it if only we had the guts or the gumption. But the fact that we've got these disadvantages, and while people have got shoulder blades instead of wings, and while we wear hats instead of halos, they're always going to be around us, social injustice and prejudices and selfishnesses and hate. But that doesn't of itself justify our tearing down or allowing to be torn down the whole structure of our society to put up in its place the only other form that has ever been devised by human beings, which is some form of socialistic or communistic totalitarian regime, which wherever it has been introduced has taken away people's rights and people's freedoms and hasn't even given them a counter in the way of increased standards of living. I think that what we have to do in this society is to recognize that there are the good points, the points that are capable of improvement, the basics of the form of society that we know can satisfy the needs of ordinary people. And I propose to spell some of these out in a moment or two. I believe that anyone wishing to fight for the cause of freedom must be prepared to accept that to do that in the first instance you must fight for the institutions that are endemic to that form of society. We must accept that every dictator in history who has ever tried to attract all power to himself has done it through two media. He's done it through the communications media, the press, the television, the radio, and other forms. Attempts to control freedom of speech, and he's then done it through control of the financial institutions. When in the name of goodness in this nation are we going to realize that if you don't have freedom of choice in finance, and I refer to banking, I refer to insurance companies, I refer to all those areas in which you can be included in that context of financial institutions, these organizations that are there, owned by the public, owned by shareholders, people who are in a competitive atmosphere, sometimes in competition with government itself. And yet, these are the institutions that the cunning socialists know. If they get rid of them, then they get rid of the whole social structure of which they are the keystone. If one conceives the whole system of society, the free enterprise democracy, as an archway, then the financial institutions and the media of communication are the keystones of that arch. Knock out that keystone and you knock out the whole structure of society and the rest will come tumbling down around the ears of the people underneath. And so I believe that what we have to do in our nation, those of us who have a greater than normal concern, those of us who work in these institutions, those of us who have families, those of us who want to bequeath for our children something better than we would bequeath for us, we must recognize, I think, some of the trends in society. We must fight for them and we must fight against certain of them. I believe that we must be very wary to defend, or very conscious of defending, and be capable of defending the prophet native against the people who would mock it. When are we going to recognize in this society that the worker's greatest enemy isn't the organization that makes a profit, it's the organization that doesn't make a profit? It's only out of profit that you can get the taxes from which you can get the social service benefits that every humanitarian wants his less advantaged brother and sister to enjoy. I'm not talking of the sorts of social services that Big Brother hands out willy-nilly whether people deserve them or not, and in the process converts that person into a grabbing, grasping, gimme person, a person who looks to Big Brother for handouts to which he's not entitled, and in that process Big Brother saps his moral fibre and puts his soul into pawn. I'm not talking about that sort of type of social service. I'm talking about the sort that any humanitarian wants people to have if they've got truth and justice and real need on their side. It's only out of the profit motive that you can do that. It's also only out of the profit motive that you can get the investments. The investments from which you can get the machinery and the systems and the expansion, from which comes not only greater productivity, from which come higher standards of living, but which give greater job opportunities with independence to people, ordinary people, the working force. It's only out of this investment that you can get the greater opportunities, the greater pay, the greater future for the ordinary workforce. Because when a nation prospers, it prospers right across the board. I don't know why it is that the trade unions in Australia, and there is a place for trade unions, there's a very real place for trade unions, there's a place, and it should be accepted that in any form of free society, men and women must be allowed to get together and to use industrial muscle if necessary to improve their conditions, provided they do it within the law. And so let's have a look and see why it is. Well, why, let's ask the question, why it is that people who are in trade unions, mostly in Australia, are affiliated with policies of socialisation? Do they realise that in doing this they're practising a death wish? Because as soon as they attain the ultimate, as soon as they get the socialisation, then the same thing will happen to them and their unions as has happened in every other country of the world that ever went socialist. They will find that they have lost their souls and they become departments of state, and they can't protest against the boss because the boss is the state. The boss is the legislator, the policeman, the judge and the jailer. It seems to me that those people who have said the workers have fought for what they've got, they've got a great deal of truth on their side. Provided they realise that in the only form of society which can't stop the workforce from fighting for what it believes to be right is a free enterprise democracy. Every other type of society, dictatorial socialist regimes such as Hitler and Mussolini, or dictatorial socialist regimes of the left like the communists of Russia or China or any other nation that's gone communist, just denies the workforce the right to fight for their own beliefs, their own hopes. How can you fight the boss when there's only one boss? When are people going to realise that the only form of society that allows us to do our own thing is a free enterprise society? Anyone who doesn't believe that should ask themselves the question, can you sack the boss under any other form of society except a free enterprise economy? There is no way that you can sack the boss in a socialist economy unless Big Brother says you may. And often Big Brother says you may not. The only form of society which you allow freedom of speech, freedom to write, freedom to move, is a free enterprise democracy. And yet there is so much emotionalism out there in the Australian economy at the present time, trying to convince the people of Australia that democracy and free and socialism are similar. Social services and socialism are not synonymous, they are opposites. The best social services can come only from the profit-making, entrepreneurial, competitive system of freedom, a free enterprise in a democratic state. The only form of society that can guarantee improvement in standards of living and at the same time the preservation of an individual's right to do his own thing is a prayer that applies to democracy. Why then are so many, particularly young people, those open minds that are ready to learn and upon whom this country will ultimately depend, why are they being fed this dish of garbage that socialism is the way out for them? Socialism is not the way out for anyone. It's the way in. It's the way into bondage. It's the way out from freedom. And in the circumstances, I believe that we must make very sure that what we do is to put up a system of society which will maximize the operations of competitive enterprise, which will preserve those institutions, the banks, the insurance industry, the whole lot upon which this nation has been built. And there's never been a nation in the history of the world that has made the progress in the time that Australia has with the preservation of basic freedoms all the way through. Why, in the name of goodness, should we want to change this? Let's improve it, but let's be very sure that we know what we're changing it to, if we're going to change it at all. There is so much room for improvement. Unfortunately, if anyone wants to change it, the only thing they can offer is totalitarianism, and that is the death of individuality and in the death of freedom. I believe that we must be very wary when Big Brother unctuously mouths phrases about humanitarianism and egalitarianism when we suspect that all he's doing is trying to get more power unto himself. When you see Big Brother using these emotive words, prostituting the name of democracy because he wants to grab power to himself, power that is like a ratchet screwdriver, you can't turn it back once you've given the power away. The power that they want to take from you because they see an emotional issue and they want absolute power to correct some of those relatively small problems in our society. There are other ways of correcting them, and we must be very wary lest we fall for the emotionalism of the word-spinning socialists, using their phrases of humanitarianism and egalitarianism and a fair go for the worker and all of these sorts of things. And all the time they're baiting the trap into which we must fall if we're not very wary. Winston Churchill said we must beware of creating a society where no one counts for anything save a politician or a public servant, where enterprise gains no reward and thrift no privilege. And in the circumstances, I believe that we must look very carefully and very coolly at the trends that there are in our form of society today. The system of free enterprise, with all its faults, is so far the best system of society that has ever been devised by mankind that it would be foolish, dangerous, and tragic in the extreme if we were ever to let it be eroded away. It will be eroded away if we don't get off the fence. It will be eroded away if men and women of goodwill do not get out and become political. Who in the name of God in a democracy should be political if ordinary citizens don't? Isn't it our duty in a democracy to be political? That's the name of the game. If you and I are not going to be political, to act political, to think political, not to be abusive, not to be forcing our ideas down people's throats, but to be concerned citizens and to take action, to walk that extra mile, to join the political party that's closest to our own ambitions and our own philosophies. If you and I don't do that, to work for the preservation of freedom, might I ask who is going to be political? Is it going to be the crackpots only and the power drunk only, while men and women of goodwill sit idly by to see themselves raped in terms of sociology? There can be no alternative but to fight in the democracy. Edmund Burke again, evil prospers when good men do nothing. And I say that in the present situation in which Australia is today, where our attacks are open and incipient upon the system that has stood Australia so well, the system of society that has led us to a pretty happy relationship between government, government agencies and the free enterprise sector, but this system is now under the most severe attack. And unless the people who know it, who benefit from it, who understand it, unless we begin to communicate some of its benefits down the line and along the line and up the line, then don't let shed tears when it's too late to cry.
Standing now, must you? Down below. I got to see a little bit of 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 a little